You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
I'm Drew Leiter.
And I'm Cletus Jacobs.
And welcome to episode 292 of the Earth Station DCU. Tonight we're going to talk Batman, Superman, World's Finest number 3, Batman the Knight number 5, Catwoman number 43, Nightwing number 92, The Flash number 782, Shadow War Zone number 1, The Flash, season 8, episode 17, Keep It Dark, and Superman and Lois, season 2, episode 13, All Is Lost. But before we get into that, let's talk some DC news. Alright, Cletus, first up for DC News. Superman returns to Earth in September to kick off a new era. Superman War World Apocalypse No. 1, a 56-page one-shot by Johnson and artist Brandon Peterson and Will Conrad, wraps up the extended storyline on August 30th and features the final battle between Superman and Mongol, and between the Authority and Mongol's unmade champions. Following the special, Superman will return to Earth and Kal-El Returns, a six-part crossover storyline between Johnson's Action Comics 1047-1049 and writer Tom Taylor's Superman Son of Kal-El numbers 16-18. So, I'm wondering if Williamson's event will be over by then.
Maybe? I don't know. Is the Dark Crisis thing supposed to be weekly? I don't remember either.
That's pretty sad. I know it's already started already. We haven't got to it yet, but it's coming up soon on our schedule. I know that.
That's good. I don't know, Drew. It's possible, depending on how it's coming out. Yeah, I don't know. I'm very curious to see. Obviously, no surprise. We both knew that the Mongol story was close to getting wrapped up. No surprise that Superman's coming back. I am curious to see, are they going to keep dual Superman titles? Like, obviously, Action Comics and Superman have both been going on. But, like, are they going to keep dual different Superman titles going? I'm not opposed to it. I'll be interested to see if they do that. And if they do, for how long before they, you know, change it up somehow. So, I'm mostly, be honest with you, Drew, the Superman stuff, especially the Cal stuff, I feel like has struggled with whatever the other big DC stuff is that they're doing, because they want to use Superman in it, and they've not consistently used John. They want to use Clark. So I don't know that I care a ton about whether it lines up with Josh Williamson's thing. Not because of my opinion of Josh Williamson, although it is negative, obviously. we've seen with William, what Williamson's doing, like he's kind of like ignoring whatever is going on with Superman anyway. So I don't know that that matters. But I am very curious to see how it's going to impact what Tom Taylor's doing with John. And obviously that would blend into some of Taylor's other books as well. So in that regard, I'm very interested to see, like, coming out of the War World story, what does Superman look like for a bit?
Yeah, I'm curious how that's going to play out, too. As far as I know, the Superman Son of Kal-El title is going to continue. So I don't know if we're going to have two different Supermans. I don't know what they're going to do. So it'll be interesting to see. And I've heard rumors that there's going to be a new Justice League, too. So I'm curious to see what that looks like. I'm wondering, because I'm very curious to see if we're going to have an older Justice League and a younger Justice League.
I was going to say, I feel like there's a really high possibility that we see that newer version of the Justice League that we saw teased in, like, Future State that had, like, John and Yara and some of the other new characters, Joe. So, that's her name, right? The Green Lantern?
Joel Mullen. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so I feel like that's a strong possibility that we see that version of the Justice League again. And I'd be fine with it, honestly. I mean, it's not like we're coming out of a successful era of Justice League, so there's no reason not to try something different.
That's very true. All right, up next for DC News. Following Batman Urban Legends and DC Pride Tim Drake Special Number 1, DC has announced that Tim Drake will get his own ongoing series this fall with Tim Drake Robin, written by Megan Fitzmartin, who will continue the story she began in Batman Urban Legends last year, and illustrated by Harley Quinn artist Riley Rosmo. The series will follow Tim as he attempts to solve a mystery over a year in the making. Tim Drake Robin Number 1 hits shelves September 27th. First thing I want to say, Cletus, is I've noticed a lot of times DC will announce an ongoing series and it ends up just being a longer mini series. So I'm wondering if this is just a mini series that's going to be like 12 issues or something.
Yeah, I wonder. There's two things, Drew, and it's possible it's neither or a combination or whatever. I think there's two possibilities. One, they legitimately it has a chance to be an ongoing early, and then they see the sales and they're like, nope, miniseries. Or two, they always knew that it was going to be a miniseries, but they don't want to tell people that because they know that people are maybe more likely than normal to wait and just buy the book. To be honest with you, I could kind of get it if it was the second one, but I feel like that'd be a little bit silly because it's kind of what most people are doing anyway. So how much are you really preventing by saying it's an ongoing?
Yeah, really. You know, I'm really excited about getting
Oh, of
Tim
course.
Drake series back, so
You know, and I was a fan of the what the writer was doing with the Tim Drake story that we read in the Urban Legends, so that actually has me a little bit more excited because I know that the creative team can, do something positive with the book. That's always my biggest question mark when any of these books get announced is, okay, but like I like the character, but what is the creative team going to do? And based on what we read, I feel like we can get a pretty good book out of this.
yeah, I'm also excited because I heard Zdarsky is bringing back Tim Drake, teaming up with Batman too in the regular title. So I don't know if that's confirmed or not, but I heard rumors of it. So I'm excited about that too. So we'll see what happens. I know that series is starting really soon. So
Yeah, the DC's in a weird place right now with Damian. I mean, I know like in the comics that we read for this podcast, all of the ads were for a Vampire Hunter one shot, which is interesting. I go for it, but also like again, like kind of weird. I don't feel like they have. I don't feel like they totally know what they're doing with him right now, Drew.
yeah, I agree with you. I've seen those ads too, and I'm like, yeah, not for me. No thanks.
Right, like, I don't begrudge. That's fine. What's weird to me, Drew, is that it's not that they're not using Damian. He's in a lot of stuff. Like he is a high usage character in terms of books that he's appearing in, including his own. But I don't know. It doesn't feel like they have a solid grasp on. They seem to. I don't know if it was Williamson's decision or if he was guided off of what DC wants. It doesn't feel like they want him to be Robin right now, and we've talked about this before. I feel like you kind of face a fundamental problem with that because, like, more than any other character, he's kind of created to be Robin. Like, he's Batman's son. Like, it's one thing, like, Dick Grayson moves on and becomes Nightwing. I know he was, the original Robin, but, like, it makes sense, right? He grows up, he branches out on his own, and I'm not saying Damian can't also do that, but there's a higher level of bond there between him and Bruce, literally being the guy's son that makes him such a logical fit to be Robin. So I don't know. This I feel like at some point we're gonna circle back to it, and this whole era is just gonna be a kind of weird, like, DC be like, oh, I don't know, and then 5 years later, oh, he's Robin again.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. It is weird. You wouldn't think they would move Damian on until he was grown up. And
You can't do that. Like,
I'm
the
hoping they.
biggest problem they have with Damian, again, this is the thing, being Bruce's son, is if you have Damian grow up, Bruce has to grow up.
Not if they do what they did with John.
Yeah, that's true, but that would be an even sillier story than what we saw with John, and I thought that that story was pretty dumb.
I'm not going to argue with you. I'm still not. I still wish that John was still Damien's age, because I'd rather see them grow up together than, rushing John to grow up and be Superman.
But the other thing that you can still, even with the silliness of that story, it's not weird to have a Superman and a adult age John, because Superman doesn't age the same way, right? Like I know that they told a story where John super like ages quickly, right, because of circumstances or whatever, but like fundamentally it's not that weird seeing the two of them, like an older, like you know what I mean, like a 40s comparatively Superman compared with a like a low 20s John. That's not that weird, right? Because again, the nature of Superman. But with Bruce, it I don't know that there's a way for that not to be weird, to have an in his prime Batman but also an in his prime adult Damian.
Yeah, I get what you're saying. Just because Superman ages differently because of him being Kryptonian.
Right. And again, I know that the story has an explanation for why John is older. I get that. But even if you don't know that story, I don't think other people coming into it that that feels that weird to see. Whereas it would feel to me pretty weird having Bruce talk to his adult son while they're still portraying Bruce as an in his prime adult.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. All right, moving on to other DC news. In September, the Bat Family will integrate a familiar tool into their already robust system for catching criminals: social media, with the launch of Batman Nightwatch, a 5-issue limited series written by Jay Torres and illustrated by Yurik Owen and Marcelo de Chirera. I really don't know anything else about this miniseries other than what I just read you. So, and I do not know this creative team.
I don't know what to think about this miniseries either, Drew. I read the like pitch for it, basically, the summary that you just read, and I was like, what? I don't know, Drew. I'm not saying that social media isn't an interesting avenue to explore. It certainly is. But having the plot be that Barbara invents her own social media platform, but like only for Bat family members, that's just kind of It's kind of weird, right? Like that doesn't quite land. That feels like it's a little bit in the "Hello, fellow kids" category than like a actual interesting exploration of social media.
We'll check out the first issue and see what it's like before we continue through the whole mini
Yeah,
series.
I again, I'm not saying that I think it could be good. I personally, my reaction to the summary or the whatever of the book, I was like, that's okay. I was dubious, Drew. I think that's the best way to put it.
Yeah, I when I read it, the first thing I thought of was Blue and Gold and what they were doing with their kind of social media stuff. I'm wondering if we're gonna get something like that with this. I could be
Right, but
totally
that
wrong,
makes
but
more but that makes A, that makes more sense for those characters, first off, especially Booster. Like that's just a natural pairing for an idea. But also they were using within the DC universe pre-existing social media avenues. This is Barbara inventing her own for what, if I'm interpreting it right, Drew, obviously it's hard because we haven't actually read the story, so there might be details that make certain things more sense. This made it seem like she basically creates like a Bat Facebook, but only Bat members use, like that's weird, right? Like that's not even
that's very weird, and I can't see
Imagine
Bruce
Twitter,
using it
but
at
for
all.
only 10 people.
Yeah, and I can't see Bruce using it.
Right, yeah, I can't see Bruce using any of them in the first place, but it's like, that's not social media. Like, if that's, again, we don't know exactly, and again, maybe the actual story will make more sense, and I'm not understanding the concept exactly. That's totally possible, and I hope that that's the case, because if what I'm interpreting is right, it doesn't, it just doesn't make, it doesn't make sense. We'll see.
Yep,
I
we'll.
honestly, I am curious to read it just because I like can't fully wrap my head around what they're trying to do.
Yeah. It'll be interesting to see what they do. All right, moving on to our next bit of DC news. Webtoons and DC have announced launch dates for the next two titles in their joint digital comics initiative. Zatanna and the Ripper launches July 11th, and Red Hood Outlaws launches August 14th. I'm curious to see what these are going to look like, because I really like the Batman Family Adventures they have on there. Those are funny. So I don't know if these will have the same kind of take, if they'll be more serious or what, but I'm definitely going to check them out.
Yeah, I'm going to say the same thing I said when they announced the original Webtoons comic that they did. I love that DC is trying to branch out and reach different crowds and use different media sources to be able to put their stories and their characters out there, because I think you need to. I mean, I don't know that the big two can, for American comics, can survive just doing paper comics anymore. So I like it. Even if these books aren't that good, I like the idea, and I hope they continue to do stuff like that.
All right, up next for DC News, HBO Max reveals Harley Quinn's season premiere date of July 28th, along with its first trailer. Were you able to check out the trailer for Harley Quinn's season 3?
I don't think I did. I think the last thing I saw was when they did like a trailer that basically explained that animation was hard and expensive, but that they were doing another season. I know that the show is coming out. I don't think I've seen the most recent trailer for it. But also, if I'm being honest, I don't know that I want to watch it. Not that the, you know, obviously the plot's not the most important thing in Harley Quinn by any means, but like, it's nice having jokes kind of saved for the show.
Yeah, I totally understand that. So,
and it's not going to affect my desire to watch the show at all. Like, I'm watching the show, so I'm already sold. I don't need to be more sold.
So, but that's coming up in just a few weeks, so I'm excited about that.
Yeah, I can't wait. That is such a funny show, and I love that they're doing. It's got a spinoff we've talked about with Kite Man. It's phenomenal, Drew.
Yes, it is. All right, up next for DC News, Batman Unburied podcast on Spotify has been renewed for a season 2, which I'm excited about because the first season was pretty good. I thought the production on it was well done. The voice cast they had was awesome, and it just sounded great. So I'm excited about it.
Yeah, I think that's, again, talking about doing different things and using different media. It's brilliant. And the fact that they executed well in its first season. I hope they do more of these, Drew. I think this is, like, Batman makes sense to do as an audio podcast thing. Like, it's because you can do murder mysteries and whatever with him. But there are other characters you could, I think, do pretty interesting things with, too. Like, The Question. I feel like you could do a really good Question, like, audio book or whatever. You know what I mean? Like, I think that could be potentially really interesting. So.
And the thing with this Batman Unburied podcast, it was sponsored by Doritos, so it had some money behind it.
I think it's in DC's interest to put some money behind, especially one, to see, like, you know what I mean? Like a weather balloon to see if it works or not. Because if it flops, you kind of kill that medium for yourself for a bit. So I'm glad. Anyway, long story short, I'm very happy it's getting a second season. I also really hope that they try more of these with other characters as well.
Now, do you listen to a lot of other podcasts?
I used to listen to more. I've started listening more to audiobooks at the moment, which obviously Batman Unburied is basically an audiobook, right?
So, yeah, basically. I was just curious because I listen to other podcasts. I listen to some true crime podcasts. I listen to some hunting podcasts and stuff like that. I've been hearing a lot of commercials for Batman Unburied as I'm listening to other podcasts. So, you know, it's out there. I'm sure it's getting a large audience, or has a large audience of downloads and listens. So they are putting a lot of money behind this. So, which I'm glad it got a season 2 and it's successful. And I'm sure we're going to see it. Like you said, we'll probably see other stories coming out with other characters. So, excited about it.
Yeah. I love the idea. I think it's such an interesting idea, because you can do some, I think interesting. Obviously, it's interesting, right? Because it's so opposite of the comic medium, which is, you're reading it and you're experiencing it visually, and this is instead a complete audio experience. So it's such an interesting comparison between the two. I think there's some really cool stories they could tell, not just with Batman, hopefully continuing that, but also, dipping into some of their other stories and characters that they have. I like a lot about what DC is doing in terms of diversifying and trying different things, because that's what they need to do. If they just sit on their hands, Drew, we're not going to have a DC Comics, in a decade. So I love that they're, continuing to experiment.
Yeah, and I was just thinking about it while you were talking there. It's kind of like the old radio serials they used to have. I think they used to have a Superman one, back in like the 30s or 40s or something like that, back when radio was big. So this is kind of similar to that, if you think about it. It's just like radio on demand. So it's kind of cool. It's, something like that's coming back.
Yeah, I totally agree.
All right, up next for DC News, the Sandman original Netflix series is coming to Netflix August 5th. So, in about a month, which we will be reviewing on this show. I'm excited about it. I'm excited about something different from CW shows.
Me too.
And up last for DC News, the Black Adam official trailer came out, and it freaking looks awesome.
Yeah, that was a great trailer. I was already very excited because I love the Black Adam character. The Rock has been tied to this character for like a decade, at least a decade. So I'm glad the movie's finally gotten made after all this time. Pierce Brosnan as Dr. Fate seems really interesting. I loved the look of Hawkman in the trailer. We saw Atom Smasher. I just. Very, very excited about the movie. I will say we kind of talked about this on the podcast a couple times, that I was pretty sure that The Rock wouldn't be able to resist the urge to be the hero, and nothing in the trailer dissuaded me of that.
Yes, and he made it clear that Black Adam's gonna be a hero that kills.
But a hero. I thought I felt I know that it Bless his heart, Drew. I think he really is trying his hardest to be an anti-hero, and I just don't know that he can do it. His instincts, I think, all scream to be a hero and a good guy. And I know that he played a heel often when he was a pro wrestler, but you know what I mean, Drew? Like, even in the trailer, he was like, "Yeah, but I kill." But like, most of the trailers seem to be focusing on his potential as a agent for good someone who can have a positive impact. But he kills. You know what I mean? I
Yeah.
felt the emphasis was much heavier on the Black Adam, with the potential not currently necessarily existing as a hero, but the focus to me seemed to be you can and should be a hero. You just happen to also kill people. As opposed to, for example, to contrast that, like when Daredevil had the Punisher on and then he got his own Netflix series out of that. I don't feel like the focus was on him being an agent for good.
Yeah. But it will be interesting to see how they bring Shazam and Black Adam together and what that'll look like.
Yeah.
Because I have a feeling they may be heroes that butt heads, but they might not be true enemies in it.
I'm not opposed to seeing that film, to be clear, Drew, but like, I kind of do want to see a film where Black Adam is the antagonist, because that's interesting. And he is such a powerful character. That would be interesting. And knowing, and I think that's one of the things that makes Black Adam interesting, is because he has a tendency, obviously, frequently, to be quite antagonistic, but with the modern interpretations of the character, while he can be antagonistic, you never necessarily want to see him fully defeated, right? Because you know that he can also help. And it's always kind of interesting striking that balance of like seeing the heroes occasionally put their foot down, being like, no, this is a line you can't cross. And other times being like, okay, don't cross this line, but we need you in this situation. It would be interesting to see him actually as an antagonist. Not for this film, of course, but if, and honestly, I do think this is still a big if, Drew. If that movie does end up getting made, I would love to see him as the bad, quote, bad guy, rather than the, like you said, the more standard temporary bad guy, but then there's actually the real bad guy behind him.
All right, well, that wraps up DC News for this week. Let's take a short break, and when we come back, we'll do our comics talk.
Coming this summer to a podcast near you. Be prepared for the return of
The Jedi.
No, the return of
The King.
No, the return of
Swamp Thing?
You are such an idiot. The return of
The Monster Sci-Fi Show.
Yes, it's coming back and it's about time.
The Monster Sci-Fi Show is part of the Rebel Alliance, part of your complete breakfast, and part of the ESO Network. It's sci-fi from a certain point of view.
At the 42 Cast, we want to bring you everything. And that's why we've jam-packed the next few months with as much as we can. You not only get the same reviews, topics, and interviews that you did before, you also get screen reads, where we compare a movie to its source material, or role models, where we talk about tabletop gaming. It's never been a more exciting time to check out our show. It's your ultimate answer to fandom, geekiness, and everything, so why not check it out? We can be found on most podcasting platforms, and we are a proud member of the ESO Network.
And we're back! But before we get into this week's comic books talk, we gotta let you know, there's gonna be spoilers.
We got spoilers!
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 We got spoilers!
Spoilers!
For you! We got spoilers!
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 We've got spoilers!
Spoilers!
For you! For you!
All right, let's talk Batman Superman World's Finest number 3. Batman, Superman, and Billy are trapped in hell. Superman uses his super hearing to find Foss' heartbeat. Superman uses a batarang on him, and the illusion ends. The trio was never really in hell. The Doom Patrol visits their nemesis, General Immortus, at his headquarters in Switzerland. The Doom Patrol asks the general where Nezha's tomb is. The general answers an island off of Corto Maltese, but that's all the information that they can get from him. The general has dementia. China, 1579 BC. Robin and Supergirl are being attacked by the warriors of Ji, mistake them for allies of Nezha. Once the duo convince them that they are not their enemies, the warriors of Ji tell them of a special tomb designed to contain the devil Nezha. Superman joins Flash in his fight against Mirrormaster, but Flash falls into Mirrormaster's trap. Green Lantern shows up, but he is under Nezha's spell and traps Batman and Superman in a cage. Batman calls Alfred for help, but unknown to Batman or Superman, Alfred is a prisoner of Nezha.
Another really interesting issue, Drew. I'm very much enjoying this series so far. I love how many different characters Wade has been pulling into this series. Like, we saw Green Lantern pop up right at the end. Obviously, we've already been using the Doom Patrol, and a bunch of other minor villains have popped up throughout this. It's been really interesting, and I'm very much enjoying what he's doing.
I am too, and this seems so different from other World's Finest stories we've seen in the past, which I like. Gives us something fresh and new, so I'm really enjoying this series, too. All right, well, let's move on to our next issue for this week. Batman, The Knight number 5. Bruce Wayne and Anton have been captured staking out an FSB office in Moscow, trying to spot Avery Oblonsky. Avery is an ex-KGB operative who is on Ducard's list of people Bruce needs to learn from. After 13 days of questioning, Bruce and Antoine's cells magically open. The two escape to the rooftop, where they find Avery waiting, pleased that both of Ducard's recruits have passed the test. Avery Oblonsky teaches them the art of disguise and espionage. She shows them her cave she operates out of. Their first mission is to get two teenage Americans from Metropolis freed from the Russian police. Both were arrested for possession of marijuana. Bruce tries to talk the police into letting them go, but fails. Antoine bribes them, and the teenagers are released. Their next mission is at the American Embassy. Antoine and Bruce are tasked with retrieving a book filled with the locations of international Russian safe houses. Antoine is able to get the book first, but Bruce ends up stealing it from Antoine. Bruce destroys the book instead of handing it over to Avery. Avery tells them that next, they're ready for masks.
I enjoyed this issue yet again, Drew. I have to say, I don't know if it's because it's been a little bit since we read the last issue, but I thought this one jumped ahead in time a little bit more than some of the others have. I'm not saying like a massive amount, but there was such a drastic shift from where we were at the end of the last issue to this one. For a second, I was like, did I forget something? And again, I don't think anything worth exploring in between these two issues. But I would be lying if I said it didn't throw me off for a little bit.
Yeah, I can understand that, because it'd been a little bit since we read the last issue. But honestly, we didn't really need to see them get captured, be in jail for that long and stuff. I'm kind of glad they kind of skipped through all that. We got to the meat of the story.
I agree completely. And I think, and again, I think the biggest thing was just the amount of time in between these, for us, between these two issues. And again, combined with that mini time jump, I don't think it's a flaw in the issue necessarily. I was just like, I didn't remember us being in Russia. And I was like, oh, no, that makes sense. That's probably where they were going next. One thing I liked in this, Drew, was that Bruce was not the star pupil in this issue. And that was refreshing, honestly.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I thought it was kind of funny that she showed them her cave, kind of indicating where maybe Bruce got his idea for the Bat Cave.
Yeah.
I thought that was funny. But I'm really curious how much this is going to tie in Zdarsky's series he's doing in Batman right now. I'm wondering if it's going to tie in at all. But I've got to tell you, I'm really enjoying it. That's for sure.
I feel like it will, right? I certainly could be wrong, but I would be a little bit surprised if when we jump back to the present, I would be a little bit surprised if we don't see some references to this, particularly, obviously we don't know how it's going to end, but, and this is a huge if Anton is still a character at the end of the book, I feel like that's a character that's very likely to pop up in the present.
Yeah. I don't remember who Ghostmaker's real identity is. That every time I read this, that's who I think that's it. That is. I could be totally wrong, but they are training together, so.
That's true. Yeah. I don't know, Drew. I don't know. I feel like they haven't made it super. I don't know that there's been unless we're supposed to know immediately that that's Ghostmaker. I don't know that there's been enough for us to definitively say that that is Ghostmaker.
There hasn't. And I can't remember if they revealed his true identity to us or not. I can't remember them ever saying what his name was. I could be totally wrong. It could be somebody different, so. But we'll see. All right, well, let's move on to our next title for this week. Catwoman number 43. A representative of the Tommaso family visits Black Mask in the asylum, sanctuary. Black Mask wants Catwoman found and killed. Black Mask asks for her mask to be brought to him. Selina goes on a road trip with Harley Quinn. Selina wants out of town for several reasons. Black Mask will retaliate for Catwoman blowing up his mask. Valmont, the killer thief, is still hanging around Gotham, and Batman is back in town. Selina and Harley Quinn stop for gas and snacks at a convenience store. Harley finds a sign for a roller derby jam and wants to go. A car rams into the back of Selina's rental. Harley decides she's going to drive as if Selina stole it, and Harley and Selina go after the car and make sure it's crashed. Selina and Harley stop at a motel for the night. While Harley is getting ice, Selina answers a knock at the door. The guy that was chasing them tries to choke Selina, and Selina breaks a few bones before the dude gets away. The next day at the roller derby, the women make the team. Selina goes to the locker room to get a drink, and her cat is missing. Red Claw appears, and she has a gun. Now, I meant to go back and rewatch the Batman Animated Series stuff with Red Claw in it, and I got sidetracked. I forgot to do that this week. But when I saw her pop up in the issue, I was like, I know her from somewhere, and I had to Google her. And then I was like, oh, yeah, she's from Batman the Animated Series. And I meant to go back and refresh my memory, or, you know, rewatch those episodes to refresh mind about her from the episodes, and I just forgot. But it's interesting that they bring in a character that originated from the animated series into the book.
Yeah, I'll be honest with you, I didn't remember her at all, so I'm glad, I'm glad you did. I agree with you. I think that's really cool. I enjoyed this issue. I did have a little bit of whiplash at the beginning of this when she was driving out of Gotham with Harley, because I was like, wait, what? Not that, like, totally everything fit with what they've been doing with the book. I was just, it really threw me off for a second. I was like, wait, Harley?
That's funny, because when I brought it up last issue, I said, I wondered if, you know, her teaming up with Harley Quinn was going to feel weird with the tone we've had in previous issues. But after reading this issue, I don't think the tone was upset as much as I thought it was going to be. I still think it kept in line with the tone they've been going with, just a little more comedic.
I agree. There was one, the first page when they kind of break the fourth wall a little bit, where Harley basically tells Catwoman to summarize the book for the readers. That was the only one I was like, hey, you guys haven't really been doing that. That's a little bit weird. But I liked the idea of it, so I didn't dislike the execution. So, yeah, I liked, like I said, it was a little bit, like, I was thrown off a little bit by Harley and the extra comedic tone in the story, but I got used to it pretty quickly, because it still mostly felt like the same book, and it continues to be well written. Very intrigued to see where the story goes next.
Yep, me too. All right, let's move on to our next title for this week, Nightwing number 92. We get a flashback to when Dick Grayson is Robin. It is the second night of a blackout in Gotham. There's a mob of 30 people attacking a shopkeeper. Batman tells Robin to stay out of it. There is nothing he can do. Batman is calling the authorities to handle it. Robin can't let the shopkeeper die. Robin ignores Batman and jumps in anyways. Robin saves the shopkeeper, but gets his ass kicked. Batgirl arrives next, and the mob goes after her. The Batplane arrives. Tear gas is released, and the mob scatters. Alfred, wearing a half-mask respirator, appears on the ladder. When Batman returns to the manor, he is furious. Alfred stops Batman from turning his fear into misplaced anger. Master Richard is hurt. He needs comfort. Alfred tells Bruce to take off his cowl and leave his disapproval at the door, or do not enter. When Bruce enters, Dick tells Bruce he is sorry. Bloodhaven in the present. Haven is being celebrated with free food, shelter, and transportation. Dick and Babs run into Bruce, who is walking Ace. Bruce states that Alfred would not approve of the statue of him. Dick states the statue is not just for Alfred, but for us. Blockbuster shows up at the opening of Haven. Blockbuster asks Dick if it's wise to be here for the opening in person with the attempt on his life at the groundbreaking. Dick replies he has someone else doing that. John Kent Superman shows up. Babs asks Blockbuster if he's going to take a selfie with him also. That night, a group of masked men have come to vandalize Haven. Nightwing takes them on by himself, making sure to unmask them for Babs' cameras. Heartless shows up at Blockbuster's office, wanting to make a proposal.
I was a little bit surprised by the development at the end, Drew. Not that Heartless would become more relevant to the plot, but he had struck me up till this point to be a character that would not be interested in others or their help. So I was intrigued by where the story might go.
You're not the only one that thought that was weird. I thought that was weird too. He'd show up at Blockbuster's office wanting to team up, because from what we've seen of him so far, he felt like a loner. So I got the same vibe you did with that. I thought that was weird. The other thing I thought was weird was, I know it's been a slow burn for Heartless, but we haven't really seen much out of him lately. And I figured we'd see a little more out of him before he kind of popped into the story to cause problems for Dick. So, but I'm still liking the character, so I'm really liking what Tom Taylor's doing. That comment that Barbara made to Blockbuster about getting a selfie, I thought that was freaking hilarious. Really enjoying this title still. It's still one of my favorites.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he clearly has demonstrated throughout this run that he has a very, very good understanding of Dick Grayson as a character and the sort of stories that are well suited to him. So, I mean, it's just been, it's a blast to read almost every time.
All right, well, let's move on to our next title for this week, The Flash, number 782. Linda is writing her book at super speed. The kids come in and interrupt her because they are bored. Linda decides to take the kids for ice cream. Flash and Kid Flash are battling Girder and getting their asses kicked. Wally gets an idea, and the Flashes use their lightning to turn Girder into a giant magnet. Cars and other metallic objects are drawn to Girder, making it impossible for him to move. At the park, Linda chastises the kids for using their powers. When Iree almost gets hit by a car, Linda uses her speed to save her. She decides she needs to have a talk with the kids. Flash and Kid Flash take Girder to Iron Heights. They meet Gregory Wolfe, the warden, and get a creepy vibe from him as they are rushed out of the prison. His explanation for Girder's escape seems fishy to Wally. Wally and Wallace visit Wally's workplace at Terrific Tech. Wallace finds the blueprints for the Iron Heights Penitentiary. Using black stealth suits, Flash and Kid Flash sneak into the prison. The heroes discover that Wolfe plans to run for mayor. The Flashes set off an alarm and retreat quickly from the prison. Wolfe discovers the Flashes have been there and sends his assistant to go get Snart from his prison cell. Wally and Wallace return to the West home. Before Linda can tell Wally about her powers, Wally gets a call from Detective Chimp, wanting to talk to him about the Justice League. Next, we're going to get The Search for Barry Allen, a Dark Crisis tie-in. And I bet you're just as excited about that as I am.
I don't know that the author is as excited about it as we are either, Drew. That transition to whatever the tie-in is going to be felt a little bit like a fine if I have to sort of thing, because he did not try at all to ease that into the story.
Nope, it was kind of abrupt. I think it's kind of hilarious that Wally still doesn't know about Linda's speed yet. He's so preoccupied with everything going on in his life. It feels like he's not giving Linda the attention she needs. He needs to stop and give her a little bit of attention.
I agree. Well, I'm sure that's probably going to be a plot point, right? I feel like that's whenever he does finally become aware of her speed, I feel like that's probably going to be a relevant point.
Oh, yeah. I'm totally expecting her to save him at some point. And he'll be like, huh? All right, well, let's move on to our last title for this week, Shadow Warzone number 1. We had several stories in this. The first one was Old Friends, written by Joshua Williamson and art by Otto Schmidt. Oracle calls Black Canary to warn her about the demon Shadow coming after her for being a recent associate of Deathstroke. Oracle learns that Black Canary is currently hunting down Deathstroke. Black Canary is confronted by Angel Breaker. Angel Breaker didn't come to fight Canary, but to ask if she will help the demon Shadow hunt down and kill Deathstroke. Dinah declines and the two fight. The fight ends with Angel Breaker called back to Nepal because Talia has a lead on Deathstroke. Black Canary decides she is going to Nepal. To be continued in Shadow War Omega.
Well, I did not enjoy the writing, shockingly, of this. However, I will say, I talked about this back at the beginning of our podcast, Drew. I really like Otto Schmidt as an artist. Particularly, I like the way he drew the Green Arrow title. And so seeing him get to draw Black Canary again in that story, I very much enjoyed the art. Almost enough to be able to get into the story, but then the writing was so dumb. I was like, oh, Josh.
I thought the story was fine. And maybe because the art was better in this. I don't know. But I thought it was okay.
It was just the back and forth convo between the two. And the, like, I hate this, Drew, because clearly Black Canary isn't supposed to die in that story. And I understand, I don't feel like Josh was trying to convince us that she would die. But you put her in a scenario where this girl, theoretically, I'm assuming, right? Well, she's there initially to offer, but then it felt like theoretically she's there to kill her if she doesn't help. And yet the whole time they're kind of bantering and don't doubt me, Sensei. And I was like, what are we doing here?
Yeah. All right, well, let's move on to the next story. It's Talia al Ghul in Inner Demon, written by Nadia Shamas and art by Sweeney Boo. Years ago, the Lazarus Pit. Ra's al Ghul insists that his daughter be present when he resurrects. When the event is over, Talia returns to her friend Amal. Talia decides she wants to jump off the cliff and climb back up. Her goal is not to get a scratch. Talia wakes up in her bed. Her father is furious. Ra's puts Talia on lockdown. Or in other words, she's grounded. Ra's has dismissed Amal and she has left the grounds. Talia finds a letter from Ra's to his mother. Talia discovers there's a Lazarus Island and goes there. Talia finds Mother Soul and hears the story about how she was dipped into the Lazarus pit as an infant to save her life. Talia learns that there is a demon in the pit. The end. What? This was terrible, Cletus. I totally expected this. When the story started, you know, and her friend gets dismissed, I totally expected her to go back after her friend and, you know, get her back. That's not where the story went. It went to Williamson's demon in the freaking Lazarus pit thing, and I was like, ugh.
And to what end? Like, it did not, it accomplished nothing. My guess, Drew, is it's probably generous, since I'm hoping there was a purpose to this, is that the friend is supposed to be relevant to the present story. And so they used that to introduce the idea, but then kind of left it there. It's like to later be like, surprise, it's this character that we randomly mentioned for two panels in a tie-in comic that you probably didn't read. But honestly, though, Drew, I really do think that character is going to pop up at some point. And I think that if she does, I think you maybe would want to use her more than, like I said, two panels in a small tie-in comic.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. All right, let's move on to the next story. Shadow War Zone Panic Room, written by Ed Brisson and penciled by Mike Bowden. Black Spider, Ghost Hunter, and Clownmaker have the League of Shadows chasing them. Ghost Hunter leads the League of Shadows into one of his safe houses. Ghost Hunter locks himself in a panic room while he leaves Ghost Hunter to fight off the League of Shadows and protect Black Spider by himself. Ghost Hunter states it's part of his training. Clown Hunter takes out 5 of the 6 ninjas before Ghost Hunter reappears and takes out the 6th ninja. Ghostmaker leaves Clown Hunter to protect Black Spider. Ghostmaker's help is needed by Batman Incorporated. To be continued. Eh, this is all right. It definitely felt like something to me that Ghost Hunter would do. Go into a panic room and leave Clownmaker by himself. That felt so Ghostmaker to me.
Yeah, I will admit, Drew, I didn't care about the story as soon as I saw it was a Ghostmaker and Clown Hunter story. And nothing during the story made me change my opinion.
I don't disagree with you on that, Cletus, because I'm not really interested in Ghost Hunter or Clown Maker that much, and they keep trying to make them things. And
I think you could do an interesting story with both or one of them, and this one was not it.
Oh, I called him Clown Maker. I meant Clown Hunter. Sorry. So, all right, anyways. Move on to the last story in this issue. Ninjas at the Arcade, written by Stephanie Phillips and illustrated by Anne Molina. Harley Quinn is being chased by the League of Shadows because she is briefly in Deathstroke's secret society. Harley beats the ninjas at the arcade and gets the unicorn out of the claw machine. A drone is following Harley Quinn. Luke Fox and Lashina are discussing whether they should recruit Harley Quinn for their new team. To be continued. There's your pre-launch to a new mini-series or series.
I'll be honest, I don't think I can accurately review this because I was already so burnt out from the, like, lack of story of all of the other mini-stories that were in this. Like, they were either fine but unnecessary or not good, and then I got to the Harley Quinn one, and I just couldn't care anymore, and I skimmed the hell out of it.
It's it was basically about Luke Fox and Lashina, or whatever, however you pronounce her name, trying to decide if they want to recruit Harley Quinn to their new team. So it's basically a pre-launch to some new series they're going to be doing, whether it's a mini-series or what, new team, whatever. Honestly, I'm not interested in it. So there you go. This whole issue, basically, it's not really worth reading. So
no, I strongly I highly doubt many people were thinking I should pick this up, but on the off chance that you were, don't.
And the reason why I included it, I thought it was just either was part of the Shadow War thing overall or tie-in or something, and it obviously wasn't worth our time, so. I'm sure we'll see some of the stuff as we go through the rest of the Williamson's story, but it's honestly not worth reading, in my opinion. All right, well, that wraps up Comics Talk for this week. Let's take a short break, and when we come back, we'll talk our DC television shows.
I'm Mark McCrae, the author of The Best Saturdays of Our Lives. And if you're not listening to our podcast, then you're missing out on amazing interviews with
Larry Houston,
Tom Tatawanovich,
Keone Young,
Michael Swanigan,
Ned Hastings,
Bill Gollier,
Dan Gilvezan,
Rob Lamb,
and so many others.
Kick back and let Dan Klink and I peel back the curtain on the animation industry.
The Best Saturdays of Our Lives podcast can be found on the ESO Network and all podcasting platforms.
So how do we describe this show? Like, what's really going to grab people's attention and make them tune in?
Nerdgasm for your eargasm?
What?
The spice must flow to be in the know.
Don't
be a willow. Grab your pillow.
But that one doesn't even make sense.
All right, stop. Snag a seat and listen. The nerds are back with a brand new edition.
No!
Okay, then. The Blurred Nerds Podcast. Rants, raves, reviews, recaps, and other bits of random fandom.
Well, see, that's perfect. You should have just led with that one.
Resistance is futile. Listen to the Blurred Nerds Podcast, right? Meow.
Fine. Make it so.
And we're back. Let's talk The Flash, Season 8, Episode 17, Keep It Dark. Flash goes to Ivo Labs to put out a fire and discovers there is a new speedster in town. Allegra talks Arianna's ex-gang member, Lydia, into giving up information on the Arianna's gang. The Arianna's gang includes metahumans like Dr. Light, Sunshine, and Ultraviolet. After investigating the crime scene, Barry and Chester theorize the new speedster started the fire at Ivo Labs to steal the Newton battery. Allegra and her source get attacked by the Arianas. When Allegra uses her flash alert, it fails. Chester shows up and creates a temporary force field. The Arianas create a message in the sky that states, "Give us Lydia or die." Flash goes to Argus Supermax site on Lian Yu to make sure that Eobard Thawne is not the mysterious speedster. When the citizen loses trust in Allegra, she reveals her true identity and formulates a plan against the Arianas. Allegra uses her ability to keep the Arianas busy while the other reporters get Lydia's story out to the public. Caitlin sends a video message to Team Flash. Caitlin tells them she is going to stay with her mother for a while and doesn't know when she will be back. Flash catches the masked speedster returning the Newton battery to Ivo Labs. She tells Flash she is not a natural speedster and she is not a villain. Dr. Mina Dewan is the new speedster and her speed is only temporary. She's the CEO of Fast Tracks Labs. First thing I'm going to say, Cletus, yeah, sure you're not the villain. Because we know she was a villain in Williamson's run.
I agree, Drew. And the whole interaction felt like a typical CW Flash being an idiot.
Yes. And I'm not convinced that Thawne's not behind it either, because she hinted at having a mentor. And what other speedster would she have as her mentor? It's a villain.
It's possible.
That's my theory. I think Thawne's behind it.
I think that is a real possibility, Drew. My only counter to that is it felt like they were really trying to play up on the jealousy aspect of Thawne in his scene. Like, he was almost jealous that there was another speedster giving Barry problems, right? Like, how dare somebody other than him do it? Which would be unlikely if it was his protege, I would think. So, but that being said, Drew, I cannot dismiss the possibility at all that it's exactly what you said. And it's,
well, I think it's just, I just think it's another version of Thawne. We've seen how he can, we've seen him be multiple places in time before. I think this is going to be either a younger or older version of him running around the timeline. So I still think Thawne is behind it.
That was honestly the more interesting part of the episode for me. I really, really did not care for the citizen story. It just, you know, at this point, it's the pretty classic combo of terrible dialogue with subpar acting mixed with a pretty dumb story. The whole thing was just dumb, Drew. The co-worker who's been antagonistic towards her this whole time, who very clearly, Drew, I thought the show very clearly demonstrated that she wanted to hand over their source to save herself. All of a sudden, at the end of the episode, the show is like, no, she's great. She was doing it to save her co-workers. I was like, no, she wasn't. You don't tell me what you were showing. Like, you showed us, for once, you actually showed us something, and now you're still telling us something else.
Yeah, I didn't like that either. I mean, we've seen her antagonistic this whole time, and then it just didn't feel right. It didn't fit with her character. So I agree with you. That's it's stretching it out too far. Anyways. All right, let's move on to our next episode for this week. Superman and Lois, Season 2, Episode 13, All is Lost. Allie has been gone for a month. Some of her followers leave. Superman can find no trace of her either. The theory is she is on the Inverse world. On the Bizarro world, Allie announces she's going to merge both Earths into one. Sam, Lois, and Christy go to get Lucy back. Lucy has no intentions of leaving. She is waiting for Allie. Sam handcuffs himself to Lucy and states, "Then we are waiting together." Sam, Lois, and Lucy have a real talk. Sam removes the cuffs to give Lucy time to think things over. Allie returns to Earth. She tells her followers that she can merge both Earths, but she needs more power. Allie wants to know where to find Superman. Clark takes John to the North Pole to train. Clark teaches John how to fly. When Lucy reveals Superman's signaler to Allie, Allie starts taking Sam's life force to make Lucy call Superman. When Superman shows up, Allie begins draining him of his power. Christy calls for help. Both John Henry and Natalie show up. Allie stops John Henry's hammer and throws it back at him. When Natalie reaches Superman, he has flatline. Natalie uses the power in her suit to restart Superman's heart. John Henry and Natalie take Superman and Sam to the DOD. Sam is recovering, but Superman remains unconscious. Allie meets with Bizarro Lana. Bizarro Lana states that she will finish off Superman. Allie is going to merge the Earths.
I don't know about you, Drew, but part of me was like, this is getting a little bit silly. I don't know. It's just the Allie plot, I feel like, is starting to veer more away from what I expect from the show, but maybe that's just me.
Yeah, you mean turn a little bit onto the sillier side?
Yeah, I don't know. It's feeling a little... Plot's getting a little bit silly, I think, personally. I still like a lot of I continue to like what they're doing with, like, a lot of the personal moments and, like, the, you know, seeing Lana struggling with the secrets and trying to be mayor and dealing with her family drama. Like, that's really interesting. Seeing Lois struggle to, like, save her sister and reconnect with her. That all stuff remains interesting, but the actual plot that we're watching unfold, the, like, big superhero stuff, has been... I felt like I didn't think it, honestly, Drew, it was that weird coming into this episode, but this episode I was like, I feel like we're getting a little silly. I don't know, maybe that's just me.
I think you're feeling that way is because To me, it feels like they're dragging out the Allie story longer than it should be. It feels like we should be at a final confrontation between them, and it seems like they're dragging it out a little more. We have Allie leave, and now Bizarro Lana's coming in, so we're going to have to deal with probably the Lanas coming together, Superman dealing with both of the Lanas, and stuff like that, and kind of dragging out this Allie stuff a little longer.
And we have two more episodes, too, so it's not even going to be resolved next episode, either.
We're almost to the season. We're getting close. We're getting close to the season finale, yeah. Though.
I will say, Drew, I do wonder, going off of what you said, I wonder if it's feeling, if it's struggling a little bit with that feeling like it needs to get wrapped up, too, because I've never fully bought into Allie as this existential threat that the show has made her to be. I wonder if that's where the ceiling, like, she was a low-tier cult leader at the beginning of the season, right? And I'm aware that she is now legitimately powerful. I'm not debating that. But I'm having I'm having a hard time accepting her being such a threat. It feels like this was highly preventable at multiple stages.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with you on that. But now she's so powerful, Clark can't really do anything. She's just draining his powers. They're going to have to figure out how to stop her without her draining their powers. I'm totally expecting Tal to come back into this, Tal Rowe at some point to come back in this and help Superman. And that probably goes off of what we talked about last episode, how we're going to see more of them being family, Superman and Tal, even though it won't be exactly like we saw in Bizarro World, but I'm expecting that.
Totally agree. I think we'll see Tal also. I wonder if part of the silliness factor comes from the fact that they went from 0 to 100 in terms of her threat level, right? Like, she was a complete and total non-threat for most of the season. And now, like you said, she's far too powerful for Superman to be able to fight with. I didn't really feel like there was much of a transition there. It sort of just went for she's a weird cult leader to she's the most powerful being in the universe. And it's just sort of like you're sort of watching it being like, what's going on here? What do we do? I'm trying to think of a good comparison, Drew, from The Flash, like the jewel thief guy that we've seen a couple that because they can clearly only hire like 10 actors to do the different roles. The guy that like wanted only the ethically sourced diamonds. I don't know if you remember that from a few episodes ago. It'd been like if all of a sudden he became the like end game boss of the season for The Flash, you'd be like, wait, what?
yeah, exactly.
And so, I'm not saying that her being the villain's come out of nowhere. That's not what I mean. But just the drastic change in threat level I don't know. And it's just, and again, the whole, the fact, I think it also is, Drew, the attempt to adapt the Bizarro World in the way that they have, I think lends to the sense of silliness because they're not really, they're like trying to do Bizarro World seriously, but it's not a serious concept, right? And so it has this inherent like, well, this is, you're taking this too seriously. And I think, I honestly do think that's part of where my issue comes from as well, as I'm sitting there being like, this is far too serious, guys. What are we doing?
And I think we've finally seen Lucy's realization that Allie is not a good person. So
I certainly hope so. My God. How many times are we going to see, Drew? We've seen them try to reach Lucy like 5 times this season. I
know.
Do
it's
not
getting
want to
old.
Watch number 6.
I know. It's getting old. So I'm hoping this is the final. This was the final one because, like you said, that many times, it's getting old. Let's finally reach her for once. All right, well, that wraps up our episode for this week. Did you have a shout-out, Cletus?
So this is going to be a different shout-out. I've been on vacation in Europe for the last 2 weeks, so unfortunately I don't have any new summer comics that I've been catching up on. But I did go to a pinball museum in Budapest, Hungary, also called the Flipper Museum there. I don't know if Flipper is just like the term for pinball there. Whatever. It's super cool. If you, easier said than done.
However, if you are ever in Budapest, I strongly recommend you go check it out. You pay essentially like a cover charge to go in, and then all the pinball machines are free, and you can play them as many times as you want, as long as you want. There was a Spider-Man 3 pinball machine that I played. There was another Spider-Man themed one. There was a couple Star Wars ones. There was a Family Guy one, which was kind of interesting. A Tron Legacy, Guardians of the Galaxy, amongst other non-superhero pinball machines. But it was awesome, Drew. It was one of the coolest places we went to.
That's awesome. I would have loved that place.
It was so cool. I mean, I was excited to check it out. And what of course there was going to be an entrance fee, and I just assumed that they'd give you like a handful of quarters, or like you'd have to, you know, get a bucket of quarters or something like that. And honestly, that wouldn't have bothered me that much. I wouldn't have gotten that many, right? But like, I was like, okay, I mean, I'll get to try some of them, and I'll get to look at these other ones that are cool, you know, and I'll just play the ones that look like they might be the most fun. Instead, I just played like almost all of them. Like, it was like, why not try? Like, I didn't do every single one, but it was like there was no reason to be like, I don't know if I should do that one or not, because you could just play them all. There was no downside.
That's pretty cool. Here in Indy, and Castleton Mall, there is an arcade place where you can go and get a wristband and play video games, old video games, without having to put any money in them. They have pinball machines there, but you have to pay for those. That would have been so cool if you can just go up and just play them. So,
yeah, I agree. Well, because I've done an arcade bar before in Portland, Oregon, for one of my buddy's bachelor parties. And, of course, you know, me, I'm my friends are all having fun, you know, with standard bachelor party stuff. And I'm just there with my thing of quarters just popping around to different pinball machines and arcade games. And that was fun. Like, I certainly enjoyed that arcade in Portland, but of course that was where I had to be kind of like, I had fun trying some of the different pinball machines, but I didn't try a ton because I was like, I'm not that good at pinball, first off. And so it's kind of like, I've only got a limited number of these quarters. Where do I, like, I want to be judicious, you know, in you know, which ones I play and which ones I do. And so not having that problem and just being able to be like, oh, that one looks fun, I'll try it. Oh, that one was fun. Oh, I was really bad, let me do it again. And there was nothing wrong with that, right? Like, there was one of them, I think I'm not that great, but I also had some bad luck. And so I lost very quickly. And there was no downside. Like, I didn't feel bad at all. So I was like, whatever, I'll just play it again.
That's cool. All right, and for my shout-out, I'm going to shout-out congratulations to Cletus and Aaron on their engagement.
Thank you. Thank you. Yes. Yeah. So
That was so cool to see those pictures pop up.
Yeah, that was a great trip, obviously, as our listeners might imagine. It's a great time. I proposed in Hallstatt, Austria. It was a little tiny town in the Alps on a like very, very popular tourist destination because it's such a gorgeous town. But yeah, it was a great time. Like I said, so we were all over Central Europe. We were in the Czech Republic. We were in Austria briefly, in Slovakia for a day, in Bratislava. And then we went to Hungary and specifically Budapest for the end of our trip. So it was a really fun time. We got to see a ton of stuff. Awesome. It was just an awesome experience.
So I'm happy for you, dude.
Yeah, thank you.
All right. If you'd like to comment on anything we've talked about tonight, you can reach us at our feedback line, 317-564-9133. Leave us a message, or you can email us at earthstationdcu@gmail.com. All right, Cletus, coming up next week, we've got Batman Beyond the White Knight. We got The Swamp Thing, Batman Fortress, Deathstroke Inc., Robin, Action Comics, Detective Comics, and of course our DC television shows The Flash and Superman and Lois. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next time.
Comic batteries to power.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping for the TeePublic store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.